In the studio, I've got Holly and Jasmine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're here to talk climate change. We did this a couple of weeks ago, but we want to come back, and we're now deep into the election voting period. Do we want to just put things in context a little bit?
Yeah. I think that it's becoming impossible to ignore that we're in the grips of a climate catastrophe. Like, I don't know if people are aware of how many climate change disasters are actually happening around the world. Like, just within our own little pocket of the world, New Zealand, we've seen, you know, things like the Cyclone Gabrielle, like the flooding in Tamaki Makaurau, and then just last week the flooding in Southland. And it's not just like that's only the stuff that's reported on in New Zealand. Like, the flooding that happens around the country, it's almost like there's flooding happening somewhere around New Zealand at any given time at the moment. So it's not all reported on even. And then just in, like, globally, like, they've just started the hazard burns last week in Australia. Yeah. And the hazard burns are when they intentionally start burning, you know, parts, areas, because they've got heat waves that have started hitting them. But they had in the Sydney Marathon, they had a whole lot of people pass out because of the heat waves. Mm. And they've started those hazard burns to try and prevent the bushfires, like what we saw years ago.
Only a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they had floods floods last year in Australia, yeah. And the year before that was the burning.
Yeah, global change is really amping up in the last few years. And then just on Wednesday, the glaciers in the Himalayas started melting, the melting from the glaciers, so the banks like burst, and all the villages around there started flooding. I think there's like over 10,000 people like missing or something. And then you look at Libya flooding, that's 10,000 people dead. The wildfires in Italy and Greece and southern Europe, as well as Canada during the Northern Hemisphere summer. The list goes on. Like, it's just, and then you look at the low-lying atoll countries. So you've got like Tuvalu and Kiribati. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Kiribati.
Yeah, they're basically just getting covered in water. And then from all of these disasters that are growing more and more every week, New Zealand doesn't even have an immigration policy for climate refugees. Like, I don't think we've got anything in place at all.
We don't want them unless they've got money. If they bring money, that's all
and
right.
And I looked at what parties even have policies for climate disaster refugees, and the only two parties that have policies are Greens and Top.
Okay.
Mm. And it's actually Top's got one little policy, and then the Greens have got like quite a few different ways of tackling it.
People are going to be wanting to go somewhere. Like, I've lived on an atoll, and 5 meters above sea level is the highest point in the atoll I was living on, and during cyclones it is waves, like the waves do sometimes wash across the atoll, but I guess what's happening is it's becoming more common. And that was going to be my question, actually, like, because I know people say, oh, but those disasters you've listed, that sort of stuff has always happened.
So no, it hasn't, not like this.
Yeah, I think it's like the and it's just increased the capacity for disasters to be.
So more often.
Yeah.
More often and more intense in terms of, like, because there's more water in the atmosphere and stuff like that from, like, do you guys remember when they were talking about, like, the rivers in the sky?
That was like when Cyclone Gabrielle was happening. That's last summer. I remember meteorologists talking about that. A lot of humid rivers coming down from the tropics, and that's why it rains so much.
Yeah, that's right. So it's like, I can't remember the exact figure, but it's basically increasing those kinds of natural disasters that usually, you know, can do some harm, but they're not like completely devastating and turning them into like super cyclones. And
there's more than people are in this country aware of what happened last summer. And everyone in the media saying, yep, it is climate change related, like the intensity of it and all that, and the regularity.
Well, it's not just everyone. It's like scientists. It's fact-based.
Oh, I know, but it's significant that the journalists are all on board now.
Mm,
but,
yeah.
but, but we're still not really aware of what's happening overseas. That aside from Australia, because their smoke comes over here.
Yeah,
Yeah, and just like, I mean, you think about the catastrophic changes to a lot of the environments around the globe that are they're one-offs. You know, like you look at so there's like a 2020 report by India's National Disaster Management Agency said glacial lakes are growing and pose a potential large risk to downstream infrastructure and life as the glaciers in the Himalayas are in a retreating phase due to climate change. And it's not just the mountainous areas of India, it's like neighbouring Pakistan and Nepal have been hit by torrential rains and flooding and landslides. So it's like it's not even just that we're seeing it more regularly, it's just that there's things happening to our land that we can't go back, you know, like these are one-offs as well.
Okay, so now that we've got that context, the back to the election, who's doing something about it?
That's pretty clear that there is some parties that there's some parties that are just sort of like hoping they can get by saying they're going to do some stuff. There's some parties that have some really good plans and some really good policies, and there's some parties that are like outright kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
Basically. Right. For our, actually, yeah, I mean, I'd use the word dangerous in the sense that, like, because of the decisions that they say they want to make, that we will have increased natural disasters and less mitigation. So less.
And actually removing regulation.
Even less mitigation. Because there's a question. I want to actually bring up this thing about mitigation and prevention, because I know a lot about what happens at council level, and they're all on board for mitigation. Like, you know, we've got to prepare and we've got to do, you know, be ready to make changes. Still not that good at prevention. And the council is a regulatory environment. They can have quite a big effect on that. But there's still the momentum for mitigation is way stronger than prevention. Is that being played out also at the national political level?
Yeah, I think so. And that's actually a really good point. Like, when we're thinking about whatever happens with the election, let's not forget that we can really be asking our councils and putting pressure on our councils to, because they do have power to make big changes. But yeah, at the same time, so like one of the Greens' recent policies they talked about is like an urban green space package. So it's kind of like bringing back tree protection laws, which New Zealand actually hasn't had recently, which a lot of people think we have had native tree protection laws, but we haven't, and it's actually resulted in like really big decreases of forest and urban areas, which is then meaning that those like natural sponges for like things like flooding and stuff aren't there anymore, as well as just like a lack of native trees, which was really sad. So they're wanting to bring back urban tree protection laws, increase native trees and biodiversity in cities and in urban spaces, which, yeah, I guess wouldn't be super big in terms of like its impact on Raglan, but I suppose for like Hamilton, Auckland, and basically they're calling them like sponge cities, so they'd be able to like soak up.
Because there's too many hard surfaces, and that's what happened with Auckland. There was water wanting to go somewhere, and it couldn't soak in anywhere, really. Almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, not enough places to soak in anyway.
Yeah, and so I guess the difference between, say, having Greens in the room with Labour or something like that, if we had, National ACT government, they don't want to bring back tree protection laws.
Because otherwise we'd just see an increase of green spaces being developed.
That's
just going to make the situation worse, isn't it?
Well, there is pressure for space in our urban areas, of course, as well. So there will be, that's what I guess National will be hearing about. It's like we've got these spaces that we can develop to sort out the housing crisis, right?
Yeah,
is that an argument being made?
I think the solution to the housing crisis is not the solution that we want.
I thought the solution to the housing crisis was it's fine because landlords are doing great.
Well, they'll do even greater if National get in, won't they?
That's what I mean, right? It's like it's working for the people at the top of the system. It's the owner's market at the moment.
The substantial chunk of National's funding has come from property developers. So
actually, I've read that the real estate industry has been funding them massively,
and they've they've been getting, you know, backdoor meetings with them, and like that's, yeah, it's all come out in the wash in the last week.
Well, that's the, point of funding a political party, is because you get to knock on their door.
Yeah,
for sure. And I don't, I also want to add in, I'm not talking about landlords, the person who owns the house next door and rents that out to people. I'm talking about
profiteering
people.
You're like, I'm not talking about my landlord now.
No, I'm very lucky I own my house.
Yeah.
Well, our landlord here is the council. But actually, I do kind of criticise them. I think I should watch my mouth. Anyway, so what else can you tell us about, because you just mentioned sponge cities is one thing that the Greens are promoting. What other ideas are out there that we're not really hearing about?
One thing that is, that also I just learned about, which I thought was pretty cool, was they've got, they're talking about a $36K like per anyone, per person, solar grant. So it would be, basically it means you get a $6,000 just like free if you're going to be installing like a solar system in your home.
Cool.
And then you get a $30,000 interest free loan for like the next, so I think it's interest free for like 10 years.
That's awesome.
And that, so that you can install like a full solar system.
That works in well with, you know, like we've got Raglan Local Energy coming in and the community energy.
Whangaroa.
Yeah, and I think that's just cool because it's like really thinking about like what do we actually need to do to change, like what can we do for people, because you often sort of hear quite big sort of regulatory changes or policies that may not mean something to you if you're just, you know, living in a town or something like that as an individual, but these are like actual incentives, I guess, to help people become, and that would, in terms of like mitigation, that's going to make us more resilient as well, in the sense that we won't be, if we had, way more people on solar, we'd have much more local, resilient
energy
systems.
They also have a policy to install more solar panels on public buildings as well. So, yeah, that'll be – that's really moving – that's forward progressive policy.
Yeah, and it's not just – it's not like the big – it's not the punishment, it's the incentive approach as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so less, people are less likely to object to that. So, but just go over, what is the benefit of more solar power?
I guess it means that we aren't relying on, well, being plugged into the grid. Well, one story I've heard that's really cool is in Bangladesh, they kind of almost bypassed their industrial revolution phase of having to use like coal and because they went straight to having local solar systems. So like, as in like little communities would be fully, they'd be off grid basically. They'd be like fully self-reliant. And it was good for them because it meant, you know, they already have a lot of flooding in that. So they need to be resilient and they can't rely on power coming from somewhere else that,
And just remember, folks, you can store the power. Like, it's, you can store it.
It's not
just reliant on it being sunny. It is like you bank it into batteries.
Yeah.
So it's stored.
And what we've discovered locally with Neil Darwin is that you can get Nissan Leaf batteries and convert them to be house storage batteries.
Yeah, because, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Because, so that's closing the loop again, isn't
it? Yeah. Because a car needs a fresh new battery that works really well, but for your house you don't need that 100% capacity being used. You can use a smaller percentage of capacity. I hope I'm saying that right. I know that, but he has been working on that and found a way to, because Nissan didn't really want to help out with that, but he found a way to make it work. So, and that's part of Community Energy Whangaroa's sort of plans.
Awesome.
So
that would have like real benefit for our local area if we had policies like that happening.
Does it, I guess, I mean, a lot of our electricity is produced renewably, you know, through dams and what have you, hydro dams. But if we, I'm trying to think about that context. Like, I think we're kind of running out of waterways that we can dam very effectively at this point in time.
I think one thing to note is with solar is that it's not, you're not encroaching on the natural environment or, you know, like there's, You're putting solar panels on roofs, you know, like it's not, you're not making any significant impacts on any environment. And then also the beauty of this is that if people aren't reliant on the national grid, they're not in debt to, you know, private companies as well. So that's a big thing, and it makes electricity
self-sufficiency,
but then also accessibility.
And that's actually that's
and
a
healthy homes.
That's
and
a mitigation thing as well, because I mean, we look what happened over on the East Coast. Like they were waiting for their power to come back on, and electricity crews were scrambling, working around the clock to do, you know, as hard as they could, but it still took a long time in some areas.
Yeah, I guess that's why I find the like mitigation or like adaptation versus like just trying to stop or like decrease the impacts of climate change. That whole argument, like that, it has to be one or the other. It's like the things that are actually going to be good for the environment and protect our climate are also going to be the things that help make us resilient.
So it's both, yeah. So can we just quickly go over where the parties are at with their approach to climate change? Let's start on the far extreme right with ACT.
That's my characterization. Speaking of, I would put them in the dangerous category. Mm. They've said they want to scrap the Zero Carbon Act. One of the more like radical things they're talking about is, which I don't completely understand, is the private property, much more rights for people. Anyone with private property gets to choose what they do on their land. So they've been really getting into this whole concept of that is, if it's my land, I get to do what I want on it, basically, which I don't actually know what that kind of law would look like, but that's what they've been talking about a lot, which...
Well, I mean, most of the rules at council are about, well, not most, but a lot of them are about you can't build your house too high because you block people's sunlight and views and things like that, and you can't do things that pollute on your land that then seeps onto other land and things like that. Like, that's kind of common sense, but people on their land at the time wanting to do their thing are like, why can't I do the thing I want to do?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It basically is just how they do it is they take away regulations. That's what I'm saying.
And that's what ACT is, one of their main things they do is
they're really ACT are really reckless. Yeah.
So that and that's an ideology. So that goes through all this stuff basically. So it would apply to climate change as well.
Yeah. And so I guess you can look at it on like a small scale of just someone wanting to, I don't know, do something on their land that maybe isn't so bad, but then when you get to like big scale in terms of like, say, huge, gigantic dairy farms that are owned by like foreign owned companies that have bought out the whole, I don't know,
the valley,
thousands of hectares around them, and then they're wanting to, their wastewater and their synthetic fertilizer and all of that just washing into the rivers.
Yeah, and there
not
are
being held accountable. Like,
and there are quite strong regulations now about that.
Yeah.
And the regional council does go around and
monitor.
And fine people occasionally who aren't following the rules. So I guess, ACT wants to undo that.
ACT basically just want to remove all barriers.
Okay, all right. Well, so if you're seeking to do something about climate change...
But
you know,
don't vote I just ACT. Want to point out as well that, that ACT want to abolish the Climate Emergency Response Fund. And that's just so disrespectful to all of the people in New Zealand who have been facing these disasters. You know, like it's just
that is.
It's
is there any? Did they say why they want to?
No, I don't know. I don't know the details around that. But that's just one of the things. That
sometimes I think David Seymour just likes smashing things up.
Controversial. Kind of like it's not only disrespectful, but it's just.
It's impractical.
It is impractical.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to have all these, you know, we've already got displaced New Zealanders from climate disaster. So it's,
But I mean, their policies, I guess do people know, like, their policies are policies for, like, super rich people. That's the people who benefit from their policies. And so if you're super rich and your house gets flooded, you go and live in your other one on the other side of the world. You know, it's like it's no problem.
Yep.
So it kind of follows from there. Mm. But anyway, let's move to National now, who I'd expect a little more moderation.
Yeah, a little bit more moderation, but really, I would say anti-climate policies. Like, for instance, they'd hinted at wanting to bring back oil and gas. And they've said they definitely would do that.
As to produce electricity or what for?
No, as in like, well, I guess, like the whole sort of oil and gas ban that Labor brought in, they would repeal that so that...
Oh, so the exploration
ban.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
So there'd be more oil and gas exploration, which, you know, at the time when that happened was like our nuclear-free moment of climate.
Yeah.
So it's like they want to repeal something that was... It's a pretty incredible, like it's kind of amazing that even happened. And then at the same time, they're also wanting to, I guess they're really wanting to appeal to a particular demographic.
They have stated that they want to explore gas and oil more.
Yeah. Well,
and there is pressure on that because
oil prices are high.
Yeah, we've our demand has exceeded the supply of oil in the last decade or so.
Oh, surprise.
So, yeah, it was always going to happen, but now the pressure is on.
And it's interesting because
That's why solar power is so important.
Yeah, and that's why, yeah, say you've got a solar system at your house, and because the Greens have more seats, we've got better the EV, cheap EVs. It means that we don't actually need the oil, but what National want to do is bring back more oil and gas at the same time they want to repeal the EV policies, so that because I think the funding from the ute tax was going to subsidize EVs.
Yeah.
So they want to repeal the ute tax, which is actually kind of a good tax because it's these cars pollute more, so we're going to tax that, and then we're going to subsidize EVs so that people can afford to get something that's actually going to be greener.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, have we summed up?
No.
I know you've got to go soon, Holly, so we summed up?
National's taking money from the climate fund to fund their tax cuts.
Okay, yeah.
They have no emissions modelling. They're promising lots more roads. They're increasing the cost of public transport while they do that. And they're cutting the budgets of agencies like the Department of Conservation. I don't know if you know this, but instead of thinking about climate change and climate action, Luxon just announced that he wants to introduce a minister for space.
Cool.
So that's really important.
Rockets, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what that is. Yeah. All the 4-year-old boys are like, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they can't vote.
Yeah. Okay, so all right, so let's put them aside. New Zealand First, more of a boutique party. They might not have policies about everything, but generally, where are they at?
Oh, goodness. I didn't even really want to look.
No, if you could see our faces.
Yeah. I presume they're somewhere with National on climate change.
I don't think they really talk about climate change, to be honest.
That's
why I say they're a boutique party. Like, they're not focusing on every single issue.
Well,
and they don't realistically have to have a policy for everything, even if they end up in government, because they can just have their pet areas.
I can't think climate is not their focus. They've ever said, and I've been watching all of the debates.
It hasn't come up. Okay, all right, well, let's put them aside then.
So they basically don't have any policies that I'm aware of. I don't.
Yeah, like you say, we haven't heard them talking about it much. Labour. Let's hit Labour.
Labour is.
when I say hit.
We're not trying to. Labour, introduces Zero Carbon Act. It's really upsetting that they never brought the farming sector or the agriculture sector into the emissions trading scheme. They've said that they would, but they keep kind of watering down that promise. So I guess the current trajectory is that they're supposed to be, that the agriculture sector is meant to be being brought into the ETS. But, it's how it's happened so far is lots of negotiations and that haven't really led to anything concrete.
Yeah.
And it's possible they would even delay action further.
Okay.
Obviously would uphold the oil and gas ban because they introduced it. So there's, I feel like Labour is wanting to appeal to as many people as possible, and so they've kind of not trying to go too hard on climate, trying to evade people that are worried that they're not doing enough on climate action as well. So
That kind of sums them up on a lot of issues, I feel. So that's pretty much in keeping. The Opportunities Party top.
I don't know enough about their policies.
No, I think it's I've only really been focusing on parties that are over the 1% kind of threshold of.
I think they're on two sometimes, but they don't look like they're going to get into Parliament.
And they do have from I remember from the last election and stuff, they did have some
they do have some
climate policies. Yeah. There's definitely one of their key things they talk about is
you guys
climate.
Did mention them earlier about something, so they have popped up in the debate. All right, where do we go? Te Pāti Māori.
Yeah, Te Pāti Māori have really awesome policies. They want to phase out use of synthetic fertiliser, regulate agriculture sector, which is really key because that's our biggest emissions producer in Aotearoa. They've got very similar policies to the Greens on a lot of things. Obviously, a lot of their policies would be around upholding and honouring Te Tiriti, which would mean just by default that we had much stronger environmental protection.
Okay. Yeah, that's an important kind of connection to make, I think, for people. Mm-hmm. Is there anything... You see, they're pretty similar to the Greens. Is there...
I think maybe the Greens have more detailed policies. I guess because Greens have always been like an environmentally focused party, they've got like quite a sort of plethora of different policies, like the subsidising EVs and public transport and the solar thing, as well as like also wanting to phase out synthetic fertiliser and bring agriculture into the emissions trading scheme. So they've just got like a lot more details, and they have like maybe more detailed plans on how they'd be able to do that.
Do we know much about the transport one or public transport one? Because I'm just thinking that like public transport in this country is pretty anemic, like compared to like you go to Europe.
Yeah,
like Europeans are probably quite stunned when they come here. We are kind of there's not so many people, and it's harder to make it work. But what what do they want to do? Like, how serious are they going with that?
I think the Greens are, pretty serious about increasing public transport and decreasing fares. I actually am struggling to remember their exact policies around public transport. But I know that, in Auckland there's, like, the light rail. I think they're wanting to support the whole Auckland to Wellington rail services. Yeah, I don't know exactly what it would mean for Raglan.
Actually, I saw something where the mayor of Auckland is complaining about National's policy when it comes to the light rail, because he said that National wants to take away some fund.
He's
kind of like I think National saying it's not being used. And he says just because it's not being used doesn't mean we're not preparing to use it.
But yeah,
we've got plans and we're moving on it.
Mm.
And this is a mayor who's probably a lifelong National supporter.
Yeah,
so he's
that's
come out
interesting.
And criticism of them.
Yeah, true. So, that's probably quite good because, I mean... That would be really annoying if you like have this whole plan and then like all of a sudden this funding, this enormous amount of funding is going to be taken away from it. Like,
yeah, because they've got gridlock problems there too. It's not just a green issue; like it's just a
it's
daily issue.
I used to live in Auckland, so
so you know.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. So do you have to get away now, Holly? Like, it's
I probably have to head off soon.
Okay. Do we want to? Have we got something we can wrap up with? Have you got something extra there?
Yeah, I just Jasmine? Want to make a point that these are the most critical years we have in making lasting change that will keep global temperatures at survivable levels. So, we can't just give up, and especially not give up on our communities that have been severely impacted by climate change, or the communities that will be affected by climate change. For those of us with children, it's a bit scary, I'd just like to say that we should be demanding much more of our political leaders ahead of this really critical election before it's too late, really.
And that even once they are, as soon as they have been elected, whoever it ends up being, that that's when we need to be putting the pressure on as well, that it's not just you vote and walk away. It's like...
Yeah, well, it doesn't work to vote and walk away. That's what they hope that we'll do.
Yes.
But all the important changes that have happened in our society that the people wanted have come from the people actually mobilising and keeping the pressure on.
And I'd just also like to say one final thing. If you're one of those people that are just thinking, what's the point of voting? I just don't see the point. Not voting isn't a statement. That's not a statement. You're not making a statement by saying, I'm not voting. All you're doing is you're handing, you're just handing your vote over to somebody else. Like, you just, that doesn't get anyone anywhere. So, we really need people to turn up and vote.
And we actually learnt from Dirty Politics, which is a couple of elections ago now, that those guys on the right know that dirty politics puts off left-wing voters and lower-income voters.
Mm.
And so yeah, you're playing into those guys' hands.
Yeah.
So when you do that, which I think, yeah. So, and also, it's not hard to vote either.
It really isn't. It's don't need ID, by the way.
It's hard to wade through all the crap that the parties are spitting out and all the jockeying and the propaganda, but it's not hard to vote.
It takes like 5 minutes, literally no more than 5 minutes. Yeah. It's so easy. And it's right at the town hall. It's not difficult. When you're getting your groceries, just pop in. Vote. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Open like every day through to the election day here in the town hall. So, yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's not hard. And you can just, and if you're sick of people hassling you about your vote, just, you can tell them you didn't vote, but vote anyway.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because that's one of the things I think that puts people, that's something I've realized talking to my daughter, that's putting young people off voting, is because they then get harassed by older people about their bad choice, so-called bad choice.
And all the aggro
Well, of course, because young people get harassed about everything. It's you did that wrong, you did that wrong, you know. That's the experience of being young for a lot of young people. So, and they look at all the adults getting angry and around politics, and they're like, they don't want to go there, you know.
Yeah, and they've just been I just read some research in the last couple of days saying that at New Zealand universities, the students, their biggest concern this election is actually climate change, but then they need to get out and vote. You know.
Like, well, yeah. Well, it's
we really need you.
Yeah, yeah, and it's easy. So that's the main thing I want to say.
Your landlord's voting, by the way.
All right, so folks, we've been talking to Jasmine and Holly from a local climate action group. Is that how you guys describe yourself?
Climate coalition.
Yeah,
like we're not really anything formal at all. We're literally just a group of people just coming on the radio.
Concerned citizens, basically. Yeah. All right, guys, look, thanks heaps for coming in this morning.